Thanks for continuing on with us. I'm taking over from my colleague Nina Rosman. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Recruitment agency Randstad joins us in terms of trying to understand a little bit better on the salary and bonus expectations report in Malaysia. That will help employers understand a little bit better about talent's salary and bonus expectations in light of increasing cost of living and imbalanced supply and demand in the labour market. Fahad Naim, Country Director at Randstad Malaysia, joins us. Fahad, from an economic perspective, what would be some of the impact regarding the high percentage of employees who feel that they are not fairly compensated or feel that they're not fairly compensated for the work that they have done on the overall productivity on the Malaysian workforce?
Thanks, Ibrahim, for having me here. Well, salaries-wise, I think, along with that, many other countries in Southeast Asia, salary remains still one of the biggest motivation factor. And I think with this whole social status where people want to buy a car at the early age, they want to buy a house at the early age. So salaries basically really plays a big part in how they want to, what's the lifestyle is going to be. Talent who are not paid fairly and, you know, they think they are not being compensated well by employer, they tend to be demotivated quickly, and they are motivated to sort of just do bare minimum at work to make sure their job is sustainable. Eventually, it ends up losing more productivity. So it has a direct impact, and I think that's where companies struggle sometimes, where they feel high attrition, they have people, you know, not satisfied with the salary, and that's what it came out in the survey as well.
What would be some of the reasons resulting in the imbalanced supply and demand in the labour market? Do you feel that this situation is prolonged or having a longer time in the making right now?
Well, I think it's very subjective because certain jobs and skill set sectors are more in demand than the other. So if you were to take an example, some industries are going for major transformation, like, you know, in IT or manufacturing 4.0. There's been a huge demand from the last couple of years in life science, and even some of the deep specialization within accounting, marketing, or human resource. That's where you will see there's high demand. There's a talent war. Most of the companies would want to secure a better talent compared to their competitors. So that's when they are able to pay more money. And one type of employees, a lot of employers are looking for, there's going to be always talent war. That's what it drives the imbalance of supply and demand. But on the other hand, there are still a lot of different areas where supply of talent is overweight the demand. Typically, when we talk about manual work, highly automated jobs like bookkeepings and all that, it would be challenging for these people to sort of, you know, negotiate higher salary with employer when they're changing job.
I would like to test this particular thesis of mine. The AI revolution and adoption by corporate Malaysia as well as internationally have seen a revolution in terms of how we do work. We've been talking about this for years now. It's now here. GPT-4 is now in the workplace. And the thesis that I want to test is that people are not going to get replaced by AI. It's those that know how to use AI that will get the jobs, and those that do not know how to use AI or don't want to learn how to use AI are the ones that will be on the way out. Is this theory or is this thesis valid for us to understand?
I think you raise a very valid question, and I think AI and automation is not a new thing. It's been there for a long time, and I think there has been a gradual implementation in different industry. I don't think so that it's going to replace people, but I think at some point we are all learning to work with all these new technologies. You know, at some point when computer came in, they said it's going to replace people, it's going to replace accountant, it's going to replace a lot of people. At the same time, there was a discussion about internet. When it came, I think the professors and universities' jobs will be questioned, and there's a lot of information out there online. But I think everyone start using it, and then they sort of becomes a merged combination of usage of technology and information. They have combined it together, and they upskill themselves. So I think ChatGPT or any other new AI tool we are discussing nowadays is less of a threat, but I think it would be more of how can we integrate this in our day-to-day life and then learn how to use it better so that we can progress faster as a society.
Another element that I want to test right now or explore is the area of specific jobs that require high level of training. For example, one of the reasons why I took a Bachelor of Accounting decades ago is because the professors at that time told me that accountants are the last to go in a company, assuming they go through a retrenchment. Today, that thesis is actually quite well tested. We've seen how job vacancies in highly technical areas, like for instance accounting, is still required. However, the automation element has overtaken the sequential role of accountants, for instance. What is needed now is in terms of trying to understand better how we can make sense of the accounts that has been done, the consultancy role that requires that is required out of accountants today. And I'm just speaking in terms of accounting. I would assume that all the other technical areas would require that level of understanding, comprehension, application, and of course, consulting element. Are these the kind of things that we see that is required moving forward in the advent of the utility of AI in the workplace?
I couldn't agree more, and I think you're 100% right. There's so much discussions around what education counseling used to say during, you know, when people are graduating from universities, that this is going to be in demand, that is going to be in demand. The industries are changing so fast. Your degree is only valid for 3 to 5 years, whatever you learn, and things are changing so fast. You could use this as a baseline of learning, but I think there is definitely a need of every single industry in a specialization. You need to keep upgrading yourself. You need to keep learning continuously, otherwise you will be outdated. It's not that you're not going to have a job, but if you want to really get paid high salary and you want to make sure that you are coping up with the changes which industry required, you need to keep and continuously upskill yourself. And I think that's what we are not just educating individuals and talent, but also telling organization that if you want to keep ahead of the game and you want to make sure your organization is adopting and learning and transforming, you need to invest in learning and development for all the different staff you have, which are contributing in the growth and development of your own company.
The long-term consequences of company that do not offer competitive salary packages may be detrimental in the existence of that company in the long run. However, companies also need to balance emergency or urgent needs of today. Bottom line is still the top of the day. And of course, trying to understand that and balance that with, say, training of staff, trying to improve that whole idea of long-term learning for staff in terms of the staff that can able to upskill themselves. How do you think companies need to balance that whole urgent need of trying to chase the bottom line of today versus upskilling and retraining of staff so that, you know, in the long run, they have not just staff that is very, very skilled, full of the kind of requirements of today, but essentially quite cheaper to train your own staff rather than get a new one at a higher price from the market?
Yeah. Revising internal salary brand is very critical, and it is very important to attracting and retaining talent, especially talent expectation and skill demand have changed significantly since COVID. However, I mean, it's not easy revising salary bands. It takes time, research, and develop and implement while managing and learning about the economic climate change at the same time. But retaining top talent, meeting the salary expectations, companies must take conscious efforts to review and adjust their internal salary and bonus structure to make sure that your employees are comfortable. But keeping employee in the organizations, motivating them, retaining them is just not one factor. There are so many factors, and I think we need to even further segregate into the age categories, and you have different individuals have different expectation at different stage of life. So a combination of a lot of things, a competitive salary, career progression, a very clear career progression direction where their career is heading with the organization. Number third is learning and development, continuously investment. And the most importantly, in this uncertain time where there's a lot of discussions about inflations and uncertainty in economy on a global level, companies need to openly communicate that their job is secure and they have funding to continuously run the business and their jobs are not going to be impacted. All these different factors plays a part in keeping your employee engaged in the organizations and having a better retention policies.
I want to talk about the external factors shortly, but for now, can we do a quick stock take in terms of the Malaysian labour market versus the kind of markets that you see right now? Randstad being one of the largest recruitment agencies right now, you have visibility across the various markets and countries. Is Malaysia unique in the sense of trying to fight for talent and try to reset or readjust internal salary structure, or are we rather peculiar compared to, say, neighbouring markets right now?
I think Malaysia still remain one of the very attractive places in Southeast Asia to make investment from different perspective. I think bilingual talent, plus you have a very good infrastructure, is cost effective. There's a lot of government initiative to accommodate investment. So there's a lot of plus, but at the same time, I think there are a lot of countries are making efforts to attract or global talent to come and work and base in their countries. I think that's where the talent war is going to be. However, Malaysia still remain among Southeast Asia, one of the most attractive place to make investment.
As promised, I want to talk about the external factors right now, including that of inflation, higher cost of living. How does this play in terms of increasing salary expectations amongst Malaysian employees, and how can employees respond to this?
Well, challenging for companies also, you know, to include inflation and cost of living into salary calculation, because the calculation as a basket of goods for is very different. You know, inflation and cost of living, supply and demand for economic good, salary, supply and demand for skill set. So I think we need to look at, we need to understand that inflation is for the organization as well. If it's a manufacturing company, the raw material price is going higher. The cost of delivering goods is also going higher. If they start compensating based on inflation, which is company were directly compromising on the profit margin. So in some shortage of talent where there's a skill and talent where it's extremely imbalanced, there's a talent war, where companies need to really make an efforts to make sure they just study the market and they are compensating well. And on the other hand, I think employers also have to understand that inflation and salary doesn't go together. It has somewhat companies will study and change it accordingly, but it doesn't happen overnight. It's a long-term process.
You know, when we talk about inflation, it's rather misleading because headline inflation in Malaysia is registered at 3.x%. However, if you look closer, food inflation or transport, those are the two kind of categories that have shot up to double digits over the past few years. And this does impact the low year-on-year pay increments and year-on-year-end bonuses that have that whole impact of employee morale, motivation and productivity. How do you think companies can address these issues to retain their top talent right now?
I think there has to be more transparent discussion. A lot of employers shy away to be openly discussing that, hey, this is, you know, these are the issues. We understand there are challenges. We're meeting your salary expectation, but we could eventually lead you there. This is what you need to learn. This is what you need to, where you need to upskill yourself. Now, on the other hand, as I said before, the motivation factors are not just salary. There's a combination of a lot of things employer can offer to make sure the employees are feeling that they are well taken care. But it could be recognizing your people, rewarding them at different point, not just only compensating in salary, but being more creative in offering different benefit. If some people are struggling with transportation costs, how can company or organization can offer them some sort of allowance covering their parking? If they have a cost of probably a living and maybe adding on some accommodation allowance or working from home allowance, all these could really help to continuously motivate them to be engaged in the job. If there's no discussion, no transparency, there's higher chances that just because of the pressure of maintaining the lifestyle, companies will lose talent and they will have to invest a lot more money in hiring new talent where they will have to end up paying more money.
Fahad, I want to explore a little bit more in terms of your idea just now on trying to, improve the mix on how to improve on employee morale. Intergenerational friction is a real item across all industries. We're looking at how, say, for instance, baby boomers have some sort of a friction in terms of how they do work with Gen Zs. And, you know, the millennials in between are also facing that kind of idea of how should they marry the kind of values that they are superiors or seniors in the organization from the baby boomers versus their younger employees amongst the Gen Zs. Do you feel that that whole intergenerational friction can be addressed? And how should companies approach this whole idea of trying to find what is important for that particular employee of that particular generation right now?
Yeah, well, exactly. This is a very detailed topic to get into, but just to give you a surface level understanding. So I think HR job becomes even more difficult now that it's no longer about learning the compensation and benefit salaries and, you know, how much this skill set should be getting paid. Keeping employees engaged, and as you said, baby boomers, and then you have millennials, and you have, you know, people who are at different stage of life, they have different expectation. HR are very, very open to discuss, especially with large enterprise companies, to study what it takes for employer to keep these different age category individuals in the organization motivated, and what are they looking for. Some are looking for job security, some are looking for fast career progression, some are looking for money. So there are a lot of surveys has been conducted. We also conduct a bunch of surveys, very similar, specifically in different market. We have a very individual survey for Malaysia market as well, which we share with our client. It gives a very overview, surface level understanding, but I think industry to industry, organization to organization, the complexity could be very different. But there's enough data out there online to really learn different people, age behaviors and expectations, so that organizations and HR can learn and accommodate these requests to manage them better.
You know, speaking about the role of HR and recruiters and labor, specialists like yourself, like Randstad, what role can specialized recruiters and online salary calculators, for instance, play in helping employees evaluate their net worth and try to negotiate for better salaries and better value from that particular workplace? And how can companies kind of leverage these kind of resources to attract and retain top talent?
Well, as the survey recently we released, 35% of the respondents in Malaysia, they said they self-evaluated their salary depending on their task responsibility. However, I think this is not a reliable source, as this is only one angle perspective. But I think the best way is to maybe consult with a specialized recruiter, or maybe there are a lot of online salary calculators, which serves more dependable source of salary reviews. And more importantly, I think it's for organizations to make sure that they are continuously learning with this data, which some of the companies are producing, and which is not outdated. Anything which is 6 months old or 1 year old, I don't consider that as up to date. So I think it's a constant learning required, but you have to also rely on a more reliable source to make sure that it is up to the market standards. At the same time, I think companies also should engage with consultancies to review an internal equalities, and as well as work with recruiters to understand the current market rate. It could be different. One HR person could be getting paid a very different salary in a different industry, from banking to oil and gas to a startup in tech. It's the same across all these specialization. But again, one solution will not fit for all the different specialization in industry. It is continuous learning required, and it might change the way how we see things.
The final idea that I want to explore with you is on the role of government and regulators. How do you think the Malaysian government or any other institutions that play a role in addressing these issues raised in this survey of yours? And what kind of policies or interventions could be looked at and implemented to improve this particular situation?
There's so many things can be done, and I think government is doing a fairly good job, you know, with initiating different things, working and partnering with different organizations to manage the supply and demand. But a national level job roadmap would give a clarity to both employees and employer, maybe conducting more industry-focused survey to identify skill gaps and competencies, maybe forecast for future needs in terms of the skills and talent. You know, we have higher demand in automation in the future. You have less demand for manual worker, and where engineering is going to create more jobs. So I think not just relying on universities or education institute to consult, but I think conducting a survey on a country level to educate people that this is where the demand is going to be, is going to really help. At the same time, I think which Malaysia is doing it really well with, you know, partnering with training companies to make sure that a fresh graduate or a skilled worker can further have chance to sort of upskill themselves in more high pay or highly demanding job. Last thing I think I would recommend is really partnering with global organizations, private organizations, to see whether if they can transfer some knowledge, some of the best practices they've implemented, working closely with government in other countries, and how we can do that in Malaysia as well. I think end goal has to be that how can we help Malaysia as a destination of talent in Southeast Asia, where the market is very, very competitive.
And of course, academia also plays an important role. I see younger graduates trying to find their way and trying to find themselves at the workplace. Better trained academics would be able to bring about practical training. Do you feel that the role of academia is actually quite crucial now more than ever in terms of trying to equip labour talent? And of course, companies trying to work better or closer with universities right now.
100% agree with you. And I think it's one of the major factor of shaping the future of talent availability in the market. And I think any country or which they have paid attention to the education institute and how they're counseling their students to prepare for the future need are way ahead of the game compared to the other countries. So I think I do think there's a lot of good initiatives has been taken. MDEC and MIDA and a few other talent corp are actively engaging with this educational institute to make sure that they are ready to produce talent which is going to be in demand in the future.
Okay, thank you very much, Fahad. That was Fahad Naim, the country director at Randstad Malaysia. You can learn more about that survey on Randstad Malaysia's website. Also, you can find these kind of resources on astroawani.com. Stay tuned with us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.